Well, welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We want to thank those of you who are watching us live here on our Facebook page, as well those of you are watching on the recorded session on Facebook, as well as those of you watching on our YouTube channel, or maybe you're listening to this on our podcast. But wherever you're at, we're just glad that you've joined us, and I'm excited to introduce our guest tonight. Her name is Amy Vickery, and she is one of the Sped Homeschool team members. And she also works with True North Academy. And I'm going to have her explain a little bit about that once we get started. But welcome, Amy.
Thank you, Peggy. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here. You have such an interesting background and an interesting delve into homeschooling. And I know that you're still in the very practical, you know, younger kids stage. And so this content we're going to be talking about is going to be very applicable to parents, not only that have younger children that are homeschooling them with special needs, but also for those parents who have kids that maybe have lower cognitive level skills and things like
definitely,
that.
Definitely.
And so so that's something that we haven't delved into yet on our program. And so I'm really excited about that. But I thought I would just have our audience get to know you. So if you could just do an introduction, who you are, your background, a little bit about your family, and then add in some stuff about what you do for True North and us here at Sped Homeschool. And we'll then get started into some of the Q&A and questions. And those of you who are watching can always ask questions. Just type them in on the feed as we're going, and we'll make sure that Amy can get to those while we're talking. So, all right.
Well, I'm excited to be here. I started back in 2003. I graduated with my bachelor's in education and started teaching in inner city schools of Louisiana, teaching pre-K. So lots of hands-on activities. Mm-hmm. For 2 years, I taught never using a single worksheet in my classroom.
Wow.
And so it really gave me a lot of good experience for figuring out how to teach things in a hands-on manner that was the kids could really understand and really grasp and really grab hold of. And a lot of these kids had never been in a daycare or school setting previously. And so it was really important that I take those kids and really enrich their knowledge as much as possible to help them continue on through their education. And then from there, we moved to Missouri, where I had the opportunity to go back to school full time for my master's and graduated with the master's in curriculum and instruction. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to see how the practical things that I taught really worked in with the theories that I was learning in my master's program. We moved back to Texas. And since being here, I have taught early childhood, special ed, and also English language learners so that in all of those applications, the hands-on teaching was really, really important.
Yeah.
Making it meaningful, making it hands-on. So fast forward, I was able to start homeschooling my son last year full-time and not have to be teaching out in the public schools anymore, which I was very grateful for. Mm-hmm. And so I have really enjoyed working with him. And now I have the additional blessing of being able to reach out and touch children from all over the United States through True North and the Thinking and Learning Center and the partnership mm-hmm. that they have. And so I'm teaching math and reading and spelling through phonics. Mm-hmm. Reading and phonics through spelling. I always get that mixed up. And for students that are struggling a little bit, maybe need a little bit more hands-on. And it's just been a lot of fun to take the online platform and to create a hands-on learning environment through the computer and really see how fast these kids are growing and learning using those skills and techniques. And then I'm also teaching an ASL class, and I think that's my favorite class. I have two girls in there that are just a blast, and we have had so much fun. And so it's just, But it's been really neat to meet all these different homeschoolers from across the United States and see the culture that is homeschooling just reflected in every single one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we think sometimes when we look at online curriculum that it's just going to be, you know, a bunch of videos, and you do interactive teaching. And so it's very much back and forth and, question and response and, you know, working with the kids as they're learning.
So that's right. And especially the math programs, you know, I start where they need to go, and we progress at the children's pace. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, it's a therapeutic model, based on the NILD, the National Institute of Learning Disabilities model. And so it's very hands-on, very much working with them where they're at and building their skills one step at a time.
That's great. Yeah. And so for parents that, you know, either don't want to teach that or they don't feel like they're equipped enough or excited enough. I know I've talked to people that I've interviewed in the past and they're like, I just can't get excited about math, but I want my child to be excited about math. And so, you know, to be able to have someone that can be excited for your child in the subjects that you just probably can't just get enough excitement for. And especially if it's something that you know that they might be gifted at, that's a great advantage to be able to bring that into your home and not even have to leave. Cause I know sometimes that's hard when you got multiple kids and you're running all around.
Yes. Well, and one of the things I'm learning myself is that, you know, creating a team to help you with your homeschool day, it can be really beneficial, because having to work right now and homeschool has been a challenge for me. And so I've been utilizing my therapist and being like, hey, you want to do a science activity? And say, hey, I checked my science box this week. And oh, sister-in-law, you want to do the phonics worksheets for the day? So you have him. Great. Here's his homework. He can do it with your kids. And so, you know, utilizing that team and that those resources that I have, you know, there's been days that my dad has stepped in and done math with him because he was giving me fits. And so, you know, sometimes the kids need to change. Sometimes you need to change, and just being able to think outside that box and say, you know what, you've got Minecraft on your computer. When you go over to sister-in-law's house, why don't you do Minecraft activities with him? You can teach him history, and check, that box is done.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. It is a shared thing, and it doesn't have to just be co-op. It can be anybody in your sphere of influence that can help. And that's a great perspective to put in. And I think, you know, that's what we're talking about tonight, just the advantages when we think outside the box of being able to homeschool kids with special educational needs that that just can't happen when our children are in a public school setting, because just the constraints, you know, as being a teacher, what you were able to do and what you weren't able to do, and even though you probably wanted to, it's just, you know, you had the number of kids and you had certain things that you had to be doing and a certain timetable. So I thought I would start out, but you had given me your top three things that you thought were the greatest advantages. And then we're going to kind of dive into the hands-on specific stuff for different areas of homeschooling. But overarching, what are your top three for the ultimate advantages of homeschooling a child who has special needs?
The one thing that really has drawn me towards homeschooling and continuing to homeschool and has made me just really determined to continue on is that I get to teach to my son's strengths. Mm-hmm. I get to take his strengths and further those strengths. I don't have to hold him back because of the rest of the class. So his strengths, he gets to take off on those strengths and he gets to really soar. But at the same time, while he's doing that, I can adjust my other teaching and support any weaknesses he has. So for example, he's very strong in sight words. So we go on the sight words. He gets some sight words. I don't hold him back. I let him go on. But his weakness is phonics and spelling. Mm. And so I support that writing, and I support the spelling and the phonics through the programs that we do, through activities that we do, so that he's not frustrated with the phonics and spelling, and he can continue on with the reading.
And so even in one subject area, you see the difference, the push and pull. You know, oftentimes we'll just say, you know, our child's gifted at this subject, but you're even splitting apart language arts and saying, here's strengths and here's weaknesses.
Right.
So that's
right.
Great.
Yeah. Cause within a subject they can have strengths and weaknesses of skills.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that a couple interviews ago with one of the math interviews I did, and he was talking about, you know, the different types of math, and a child can be good at one type of math. We don't think of math as being types, but there are. And that too. We have a question from Jace Clark about the True North Academy that she wanted to know, is the academy an accredited curriculum? Do you know about that?
I don't know where we're at on the accreditation process.
Okay.
I know Lisa Meering would definitely be willing to answer that question.
And Lisa, the director for that program, will be my guest next week. So definitely we'll make sure that she answers that question during our interview next week. And we have a couple hellos here from Marie Prince. Hi. And then also, I wish I could say your name. Okay. Here's what I was telling Amy earlier. I don't sound out words. So my phonetics is not that great, but we want to welcome you too.
I got the junior part.
Yes, exactly.
So the other thing that I really work to do with my son is I let him spend time exploring areas that he is very strong in and has a desire to explore. So he likes to spend his morning building with blocks and doing that problem solving piece. And I have seen so much growth and development by giving him that time, even if it's just 30 minutes or an hour first thing in the morning, to really work with different blocks and different materials. Some days he's working with magnetic blocks. Some days it's Legos. I think we've got probably four or five different types of blocks that he rotates through. But I noticed the growth and in the difference in his reasoning and also in his play and his social skills that are developing because he does have autism. And so the social skills are really important.
Yeah.
And so I've seen a real benefit by giving him that time to really explore his interests. Mm-hmm. As he grows older, I know those interests are going to change and grow and, just giving him those opportunities.
Move and flux with that. I know my oldest, again, on the spectrum, same as yours, and building was always his thing. I think by fifth grade, we bought a Connect set that built all the historical bridges. And we did mechanical engineering that year with Connects. And it became part of school. And so that was, of course, the part of school that he wanted to do all the time. But we just considered it a subject. And then, that is one of those things that you can just build in and make fun, but also make educational.
And so those weaker areas that he has, I try and teach those things in small bursts. So direct style. So with the phonics, we work on just one sheet a day, and we hit that worksheet. We try and do it every day. When we first started sight words, it was every day we would go through those sight words. Any that he missed, we would review them, but it took us 10 minutes tops and he was done with that subject for the day, because that intense learning is so much more meaningful than anything else.
Right. And so then they get fatigued at the same time.
Right.
So
right.
Short bursts are so wise because they're done when they're done with that. And they want to see the end in sight too. So knowing that this is the only thing we're doing, it's the only thing sitting on the table, that's a good reward for them too.
Well, and then he would go build with his blocks. And while he was building with his blocks, his brain would be taking that information we had gone through and getting it organized into his brain and so that he could recall it again later. And I would see growth from day to day by doing
that.
That's
an important point, is that, our kids continue to process things after. And if we keep trying to shove one thing after another and not allow them that process time, that can kind of take away what we just put in.
And sometimes he even needs like a day or a week off to for that brain to process, especially if he's having growth spurts or things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's so important, because I find that when I come back to it, he's further along than when we left.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the person whose name we couldn't say, she said she's from Brazil. So, thank you for being gracious to us, but welcome. We're glad that you're here. And also Marie Prince said create a play first thing in the AM works for us too. I think, yeah, it gets the brain going, and especially in an activity that the child is not offensive to. And so it kind of opens that door, but you just can't let them play too long either, because then you never get them going.
Well, and I find that my son will go get books off the shelf and start reading books out loud during that time too. And so he does more than just build. And so he gets his reading in and things like that. Sometimes he'll go read books to his brother or things like that. Yeah. So by giving him that time, he really has kind of expanded his activities into other subjects and things like that. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll put something out intentionally, knowing that, okay, this is kind of appealing to him and it's something I want him to work on.
Right. That's a great idea. So let's get into some specifics about just the advantages. I know the first area is where you were talking about structure and how you can change the structure of your homeschool to be very different than a typical school classroom, to be more conducive to teaching a child more hands-on and more multi-sensory.
So one of the things I do when I structure the day for my son is I use a checklist. I have everything written out that I want to accomplish for that day. So if we're doing flashcards, if we're reading a book, we're going to do a math page, whatever we're going to do, it's all written down on that page. So he kind of sees what his day is going to be like as a whole. And then I give him some choice and some say in how we go about completing those tasks. So I'll tell him, okay, we're going to get something done. What are we going to do? And so he has a choice of picking which activity he would like to finish first. And sometimes he goes, you know, top to bottom down the list. And so I'll kind of intentionally arrange things the order way I think they should be done. if I think it's going to be that kind of day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he'll skip around. And then if I have something special planned, it usually goes at the bottom and he knows he has to complete the other things before he gets that, and a little bit of motivation for that. Mm-hmm. So something like a new set of Legos or getting to play, have some tablet time on those educational games and things.
Yeah.
With older kids, you could do the same thing and write it out in a planner for the week and let them have some choices to how they complete their weekly assignments. So they might want to do all of their math in one day or, you know, get more math out of the way and do some reading or whatever, however they want to do it. You know, if there's something specific that you need done on a certain day, then, you know, you can mark that, you know, this has to be done on that day. But, you know, anytime you can incorporate choice, it really gives your kids a sense of ownership and helps them be independent learners.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got an article on the Sped Homeschool website that has a picture of your checklist for your left-handed son. And you've got to see this. It just search left hand on our website, because Amy moved it to the other side because her left-handed son was covering up the checkboxes with his left hand instead of seeing them.
He was having a hard time going across and checking on the right hand because he was left-handed. So his hand covered the page. So I had to learn to modify for a left-handed child and bring that back over to the left-hand side so it was easier for him to check off. So it was not something I ever thought about in 15 years of teaching until I had my son that I was homeschooling as a left-handed child.
Yeah, you learn so much more as a parent. So yeah, don't feel like if you don't have a degree, you're not equipped, because you I think of all the people on our team that have degrees in teaching, they're like, I learned so much more about teaching when I started homeschooling.
definitely. That is when I started learning, and it was sitting at the feet of the veteran mamas and all the information that I've learned from the moms and spent homeschool and around here and locally and everything else. So the other trick that I use is when I laminate something or put it in a sheet protector to write on.
Yeah.
I use a wet erase marker instead of a dry erase. They make Vis-a-Vis is the brand I tend to prefer. And they're the old overhead projector markers. If you were in school when they had overhead projectors, and they wipe off clean. I just use a paper towel, wet paper towel, dry it off, and it's clean. Whereas dry erase markers kind of leave a residue sometimes.
They do. And yeah, sometimes you just have to throw the thing away, and that's not really the point that you're trying to do. You're trying to keep it reproducible, and it's not, doesn't work all the time with those. So that's a really good tip.
And then, you know, if your child's having issues with looking at the worksheet and being overwhelmed, you know, don't be afraid to take a pair of scissors to that worksheet and actually physically cut it into sections and give them a section at a time. Because sometimes just visually, it's too much for a child to look down and see 20 questions. But if you give them to them 2 questions, 4 questions, whatever at a time, even half of them at a time, it becomes so much faster. They'll sit down, they'll work out those questions, go take a 5-minute break, come back. And it's just amazing the difference in their attitude and their sense of accomplishment.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Because, you get overwhelmed way too easily. I mean, even as adults, we do. And somehow we think that our kids are going to be able to get over this. There's so much stuff on this page. And, you know, it's not really that much. But, yes, it is. So, I want to welcome, got Angela here and Renee. Welcome. And sorry, our guest from Brazil says, he, not she. What do you think about video classes?
There are some that have been well done. True North does offer some, but I think that the live classes where you can really interact with the kids, I think there's a benefit to that. And so, you know, it depends on the student and what kind of learner they are. If they're a visual learner, then a video class might be really effective. But if they're more of a hands-on learner, then they might need to be able to interact with the teacher and do more of a live video class.
As opposed to recorded. My daughter hated math that was pre-video because she felt like she had the right answer, but she typed it in like the space was in the wrong place, and then it was wrong. And it was like defeating to her that she'd gotten it right, but it still was wrong. And so she just did. If for each child, it's going to be different and depends on how sensitive they are, really. So, and I know just looking at different video curriculum programs, they are very different. So definitely take a look at them and see if it's a good fit too.
Absolutely.
So what about motivation? Since we moved on to, you know, not giving them the whole thing just because that's too much too, but sometimes kids just need some motivation to get going or to keep going too.
Right. So we've been having some motivational issues with math recently. So I know everyone's favorite subject. And it's not an ability thing. It's just he doesn't want to do it. He'd rather go play. And so one of the things I'll do is if there's questions that I know he knows the answers to, sometimes I'll just ask them to him orally and write the answers. Sometimes I'll ask orally and then make him write the answers. And then, you know, one thing that really motivates him is then I go get out, you know, the page that has all the little bitty circle stickers. And I start putting one on each of the answers he's answered. He's like, oh, I'm getting stickers today. And so then he goes, well, here, let me answer a few more. Oh, look, you answered a few more. Here, let me put those stickers on there. Well, then he wants to do the stickers himself, which is fine with me. Because then he takes it over, and he'll write an answer and put a sticker and write an answer. And so he starts motivating himself. And so I also have a ladybug stamp, and he really loves that ladybug stamp, too. And so he'll do the same thing for the ladybug stamp. And it's cool because it's got the little one that it flips inside, so it makes noise. He really likes that aspect of it. For other kids that aren't motivated by that, I've seen things like a work break type thing where even if it's you do this problem and then you get to pick your break, whether it's, you know, 5 minutes of tablet time or 5 minutes of computer or get to go build for however long, whatever your agreement is with them. And then you slowly increase it to be, you know, maybe it's two questions. Or maybe it's a whole page, you know, down the road after they've gotten better, you know, it's it's this half a page, this half, you know, whatever you can increase it to, you slowly increase the workload. You kind of start small and build them up so that, and you make a big deal over it when they get it the first time. So,
exactly. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know what? That did not fail. I tried every other thing, but those breaks were what he needed because he was just so antsy. And he'd go climb a tree usually in between, and then it would be fine. You
know? We have one of the bouncy balls with the handles, and my child goes flying through the house. I mean, it's not bouncing, it's flying. So, especially with all this rain and the icky weather we've had, he has been living on that ball.
Yeah, you definitely need to have some alternatives because winter's coming for those of you that are up north, and with rain and the heat. So it just is variable, but those breaks are definitely needed.
Yeah. So I've seen other token systems and things like that, but those visual reward systems really do help when you've got a reluctant learner. And just praising them, lots and lots of praise for every little thing.
Yeah,
and
it's, you know, learn your child's love language, because then you will know what they need for that motivation. And for each kid, it's different. It's not going to work the same, but yeah, definitely try out Amy's ideas. They're all great. So, what about the space in which you work in? And the mediums in which you use, because those can be variable also and make a huge difference.
Yes. So working on an easel is a great way if your child needs to stand and work. And you can either clip the paper to, or also, you know, I was talking to our OT that comes and sees my son, and she likes it when the child holds the page with one hand and uses the other hand to write, because then you're working the muscles in both arms.
Oh, yeah.
And so if they're able to do that, having to hold the page while they're working is actually really good for building those muscles and building that strength. Mm-hmm. And so she, so I really like the idea of working either on a wall or on an easel. And sometimes, that wall is a little bit bumpy, then they get some sensory.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so that's really
even just from the pencil going over it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Writing over the carpet, writing, you know, with chalk on concrete, things like that. You could even, if you've got the right height furniture, some of the short tables or piano bench, you can even tape the work up underneath the table or piano bench if it's a low table. And they can work upside down. And then, you know,
that's... Our kids used to do that on their own. It was something I didn't even come up with, you know, or else they'd be reading a book, laying with their, you know, head hanging off the couch upside down. And I thought, that's just the strangest thing, but...
It works for some kids. Better.
Yes, it does.
So laying down on their stomachs and elbows is a really good way. And that builds these muscles, especially if you've got a child that kind of struggles with handwriting. You know, some of these alternative positions are really good for building these muscles that are the foundation for the hands.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Sitting is not the most conducive to core strength. And so standing, definitely, or laying on the ground like that. Didn't even think about combining that with with schoolwork.
So sitting on a yoga ball, we have the ball with the handles, and my son was trying to sit on it today and work, and he was like this, and I'm going, how could you even see? Because he was so it worked. We got work done, and we got it done early, so I was glad. We have another one that sits on a stand, so it doesn't, he can bounce on it, but it doesn't move around on him.
Yeah.
And so that one was really helpful, especially when we first started homeschooling. That ball chair was absolutely necessary. One of the things that our therapists do is they'll play a game while they're doing work. And so he answers a question or two, and then he gets to have a turn at the game. And so that's really effective if you've got a child that's a little reluctant, where, you know, you pull out the game of Uno or the game of Sorry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And as they're answering their schoolwork, they answer a math question, and they get to have a turn or, so that motivation to keep going.
Yeah, I know Don wrote an article on our website that had a lot of of things like that, even like puzzles. She was talking about, you know, if your kid likes to do puzzles, then, oh, you get to, you know, find the next piece after we finish this, and then you have to come back. But using those things as motivators that they love to do, or definitely, even just, you know, dressing up a doll or whatever.
We've done Legos where he got one Lego for each question he answered. So, you know, some days it's whatever works to get the work done.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. And you got to be creative. But the nice thing is you can be creative. You know, your child is not stuck in this environment that limits what variables can be used to help them get to it. And really thinking of it as adults, don't we modify how we motivate our own selves? And, you know, no, I don't want to clean my house, but I have to do it. So what can I do to motivate myself? Well, you know, you find those things, whether it's music or listening to an audiobook or, you know, talking to a friend on, you know, on the phone while you're cleaning or, you know, something like that. But you know what you need to motivate you. And isn't it wonderful that your kids at a young age get to discover that because you're discovering it with them instead of them just being stuck in a classroom, unable to do this, and then you send them off and say, well, just figure it out. I mean, that's probably what, you know, that's what happened in my life, and I'm sure yours too. And you kind of wondered, you know, well, what do I do? Because I'm just so used to, you know, doodling on a page while my teacher's talking.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah.
And I had another comment, and I think I lost it.
Yeah, there was a comment. What do you do when you simply don't understand the subject? You know, that's a really good question.
So, if the parent's having trouble understanding the subject, there are resources on YouTube. A lot of YouTube is a really great resource for finding answers to questions, especially math questions. That seems to be one that a lot of parents struggle with. So there's resources there. Pinterest has topics and things that you can find on things. And again, with math, you know, a lot of times they have anchor charts that will explain. An anchor chart is basically just a resource, a tool for breaking down the steps for a math problem. So it might show an example of a long division problem and how to solve it, and they'll have little notes on each step. So, you know, things like that, anchor charts, things like YouTube videos that go through the explanation. Those are all really useful tools to utilize. Hopefully that answered his question.
Yeah. And then Marie Prince did show Khan Academy shows great math examples. I have to agree. They have some wonderful videos that are very step-by-step, and it's free too. Just search Khan Academy. But you know, the wonderful thing is, as parents, we get to learn along with them. I mean, I was awful at history. I didn't know anything about history when I first started homeschooling my kids. And I've learned to love it because I became a student with them. And so don't always feel like you have to be an expert. You can be just learning with your children too, and going one step at a time. And get those resources, like Amy said, that you need so that you can learn along with your child.
And I use Google all the time.
I didn't have Google when we were homeschooling. You know, I think of all these resources now, and I'm like, well, yeah, we just kind of made it through.
Libraries are good resources too.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So let's go into some topic or subject specific.
So things. With writing, I use a variety of materials. My son is a very reluctant writer, so I try and encourage writing every chance I get. I use dot markers, scent markers. You know, there's so many different types of markers out there. And I buy crayons and pencils. He loves the twist pencils and crayons. He doesn't like the feel of the paper crayons. That's my son. So it's probably part of a sensory issue. He's getting better. We're starting to use regular crayons a little bit more.
It takes that oil out of your skin, and it can be really irritating if you're really sensitive on your fingers.
Yeah. So first thing I got him using was the Twist crayons and pencils, and the Twist. We found out the Twist matte pencils are actually erasable, and so that was really handy for activities that, you know, you might need an eraser for, like in math and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so we really like those. My little one loves the smelly markers. He will. He sits down and he.
Is his nose always colored?
He's my drawer, man. He sits down, he draws and colors, and you give him a sheet of stickers, and he sticks stickers everywhere. But he's my little fine motor guru, so he cracks me up. Writing on with sidewalk chalk, writing with your finger on the carpet. Mm-hmm. Or you could use sandpaper or a real even like a piece of material stretched, you know, and so just different fabrics and textures. They even have like the sequin pillows that when you go a different way, it makes you could write on those. I can think of some little girls that would just think that was the coolest thing ever to do their letters.
You get to write with glitter. Yes.
Yeah. Anything that glitters. So unfortunately I don't have girls. I'm very sad about that.
Well, my daughter looks at those pillows and it's her ADHD or her autistic tendency. She goes by and like pushes them all down because she can't stand even being in the store when they're all messed up. So I stand there and wait for her. But you know, there's one thing that she's an artist, and doing art, they have these kneaded erasers. I don't know if you've ever seen them before, but they're like Play-Doh, but they're erasers, and it's like an acceptable sensory toy for teenagers. It doesn't make any noise, but it's almost like a sand, and it's. So anyways, if you've got older students that need just something to have in their hands,
that's a really good idea. I buy a variety of pens. When he was first starting out writing, I bought all the little bitty pens and markers and pencils. Like they make little mini ones that are about the size that they even have little bitty mechanical pencils nowadays. And those were just a perfect size because he didn't have the strength to hold a big pencil. And so that allowed him to work on his grip appropriately with a tool that was the right size. Rock crayons. I've seen different varieties of rock crayons, triangle crayons, wiki sticks, pipe cleaners, magnetic letters. I saw an idea today where they were taking toothpicks and using toothpicks to make the letters, you know, just anything like that. So anything like that, you know, you can make hands-on and 3D, you know, anytime you can make it that way, shaving cream, sand, you know, if they have an allergy to shaving cream, maybe they can use whipped cream, you know.
You don't want them eating shaving cream. Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, you know, give them some pudding and some whipped cream.
One easy way to make those really big crayons, my mom used to do this, and this was way long ago, but you would get, just take the covers off of like a metal jar or a glass jar with the metal lids, and then put your crayons in there and melt them on the stovetop in just like a pan, and then let them cool. And so then when you pop them out, you've got these big chunky crayons that kids can hold on to too. And it's cheap. Yeah. It's just your leftover crayons that you don't know what to do with.
So that's a good idea too. For reading, one of the things that I did for my son from the time he was small was I would put the words on anytime we watched a TV show or a movie. And so he started, when we started learning how to read, he started watching those words and noticing the words that he knew and matching up other words with what he was hearing. And that's part of why he's such a strong sight reader. Because he's always seen
for kids with dyslexia. We found this with my middle one. I asked him, how can you watch a foreign film and read the captions for 2+ hours straight and you can't read a page in a book? And he said, I don't know. I just can't. But what we learned, when I did an interview with a dyslexia specialist, she said it resets their brain. And it recenters it. The pictures on the screen do that. So it actually will help them to read better if you do captions versus them just reading a sheet of paper that has no pictures on it. So,
yeah. So we, we did that. We also, electronic books that highlight the word as it reads are also very useful for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I know if you are in the state of Texas, you can get a library card to the library in Houston, and they have a huge database of electronic books.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and a lot of libraries around the country, too, have access to Kindle's books. And so then you can check out Kindle books for free with your library card, and Kindle has a Read to Me app that will automatically read and highlight those words too. So, and it's even on the paper ones, the black and white ones. So that's something that parents can look into also. We took advantage of that.
So we use a lot of educational DVDs and games, because my son, sometimes if we're on the go a lot, I don't have time to sit down and do paper and pencil. Mm-hmm. And so we have an educational tablet, we've got an iPad. And so they explore games and activities through there. And he's picked up a lot of concepts from those things.
Mm-hmm. Is there a place that you would recommend parents to go to get some good educational content or apps or games?
I've kind of picked them up from several different places. Our educational app tablet that we have is Leapfrog Epic. Oh, and I've been really impressed with the games. And that one goes up into, some of the apps go up into the upper middle school. Upper elementary is what I meant to say.
Okay.
And so it goes pretty high. But it's got science concepts. It's got history concepts. It's really pretty. He's done cooking. He learned a lot about cooking and measuring. From the app, he would tell me, "Mom, your tortilla is steaming. It's done."
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. This one's done.
Who needs the food channel?
He would take the measuring cup. I'd tell him, "We need a half a cup." And he'd take the measuring cup. I'd show him where the line was, and he knew how to fill it up to right to that line. And and so he learned a lot of things from that resource. And so I was really impressed with a lot of their apps. And once you buy the app, it's yours. And so you can use it for multiple children. You can add profiles over the years. And so my little one's already been exploring it. He ate the stylus, but he's been exploring the tablet.
Oops.
I know. Like, you ate the stylus. The stylus is gone, but the app is still good. So just making things as multi-sensory as possible. Is always my goal. Anytime you can make it hands-on, you can use your listening skills as well as your visual. It just makes it so much more meaningful.
It does. Yeah. You connect those places in the brain and keep building those pathways. Cause when our kids need to recall that information, it's not always going to be coming in from the same place, And so they need to have different pathways to get to that same information. And we forget that, it isn't just we tell them, then they spit it back, and then they know it. No.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
One of Sped's partners, Right Start Math, has some really neat little math games for the iPad. I downloaded their Fraction War, and my son's been exploring that one. I think it's called Corners or something like that, where you have to add up the sides to certain multiples.
Oh, yeah, she was talking about
one,
that.
I play that one. That one is fun. So my son's been using their abacus to do his math work, and has been really enjoying using the abacus. And then I know they've got one more, but I don't remember what it is. But they were all just a couple of dollars. When he was younger, he used the Bob Book apps on the iPad, and I bought the paid version, and it was worth it because he really, really explored those and used those a lot.
That's good to know. None of those things existed when I homeschooled my kids when they were little, but it's nice to know that those options are out there now for parents to use. And I'm glad you're listing off some good ones.
PBSKids.org. They have an app for the iPad and probably for Android too. They do. And you can download the games, and they've got games on all kinds of subjects. Because their shows cover, they're all based off of their shows, and their shows cover different topics and different subjects. And so sometimes you're doing math and doing sorting. Sometimes they're doing phonics and reading and science activities, comparing, estimating type, things like that for the different activities. Mm-hmm. And even my 2-year-old gets in there, man, he wants his iPad time. And he's a funny little guy.
Yes, he is. He's my number one fan.
he's actually sitting behind me so he could come see you. But yeah, playing games, singing songs, anytime you can get, you can incorporate something fun into it. It really does help.
And again, you know, going back to that subject we were talking to at the very beginning was, you know, wherever your child, what they gravitate towards, try to build that into their learning process. You know, if singing or music or something is what they connect with, make everything, you know, connect with that, because it's going to be embedded deeper into them. Just as we know, you know, I want to connect with something that, you know, I enjoy doing. And it just, I think we don't realize that the things that we enjoy are those conduits into our brain that actually work the best.
Yes.
It's because it's the ease of what we can do when we're in that mode. And, yes. And your children have those same things. And unfortunately they aren't built all the same way. Cause wouldn't it be nice if they all love to sing songs? Or all love to build, but they don't. So you get to individualize it, but still, you have that freedom to do that. All right. So let's see. Was that it for reading, or did you?
I think that was about it for reading. And then math. We kind of talked about math a little bit, but using real life objects to count, yes, to addition, subtraction, even multiplication, division, you know, give them a handful of Cheerios and tell them, okay, we need to divide these into equal parts. And you know, everyone needs so many Cheerios. And so making it, you know, hands-on and, you know, as many, you know, engaging all of those senses, and then, you know, pulling out the worksheets and the things. You know, it's going to make it so much more meaningful when they look at the numbers, then they're going to see those Cheerios in their head, and they're going to have that vision of what it meant.
Exactly. Also the things that they relate to every day. You know, you don't need those math blocks that you can buy. I mean, yes, it does help to visualize the concept, but your child just sees those as school also. But when you can build in elements that are from their everyday life and say, this is math also, it doesn't make it seem so abstract.
Even sorting clothes, making patterns out of clothes and socks and, you know, sock, shoe, you know, and just creating things around your house. Mm-hmm. You know, all those things are very useful. And those were activities that I would give for homework when I was a teacher in public school, is just, you know, do the laundry together, sort the laundry. Well, hey, you know, it's a win-win. Your kids get to learn about sorting. Uh-huh. And
and you get the laundry done.
The laundry done.
It's a great idea.
When you're looking for curriculum, especially math curriculum, because that's one that a lot of parents, even if they use other resources, they usually want a curriculum for math. Mm-hmm. Look for one that is hands-on. I know the lower levels of math you see are very hands-on. Mm-hmm. The Right Start Math is hands-on. It uses the abacus and things like that. Unlock Math is not necessarily hands-on. It can be if you incorporate manipulatives in it. It's on the computer, though, and it's very visual.
Right. And it's upper level math anyways. It's algebra and up. And so when you're getting into the abstract like that, usually your children should be able to do more theoretical conceptualizing. And I know they try to build in some applications into that program too.
Yeah. So, and again, using music and games, I know Matthew C. on their blog has songs for all of the math facts and the skip counting. you know, things, resources like that, that you can find and utilize are always beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. So the last subject that we have, we've got about 10 minutes left. This is going by fast. We're going to talk a little bit about science and social studies too.
So with science and social studies, you know, I understand, you know, sometimes you can't go out and go on field trips out and about, especially if, you know, you've got 6 feet of snow on the ground or whatever. So one great resource is virtual field trips. And there are free ones and there are ones that you pay for, that you go in and you explore a place through the internet. And they've got little videos that you watch and different things that you do and activities that you can do. Going to the NASA website, there's all kinds of resources from NASA and the Hubble telescope. If you've got a kid interested in science and space and those kinds of things, there's so much available to be able to see and do on their websites.
I know we studied the 50 states, and I think the most exciting things my kids found, because we couldn't travel to all the 50 states, but we would pick a profession that was only done in that state. And then we watch a YouTube video on it, like cranberry harvesting. I mean, we never saw that before, but it was so cool. So, but yeah, of course.
That would be fun.
That's a great resource.
That would be fun. Mm-hmm. That's a really good idea. I might have to borrow that one.
Yeah.
So anytime you can do a hands-on experiment, that, you know, it just brings it home, even if it's just kitchen experiments type thing.
Yeah.
Just cooking with your kids is great science, because my son was trying to rush as we were baking a cake together. And he says, I'm going to go get the water. And so he went and put water in the cup and came in and dumped it before I got to check how much water it was.
Oh, no.
And I still don't know how much water it was, but it probably was not the right amount because the cake was slightly off. It wasn't too bad. It was edible. So. But that was a great teachable moment and about, you know, next time let's measure a little bit more carefully.
Yes,
because he didn't use a measuring cup. He just grabbed like a cup off the counter. It was like, oh, 1 cup of water. I was like, well, how much of that did you put in? The whole thing?
Yeah. My daughter did that with milk, and I can't remember how much more milk she added into the macaroni and cheese once. And I was like, well, can you think of a way to solve this problem? So eventually she grated enough cheese by hand to thicken the macaroni and cheese so that it was edible.
So that was cheese and macaroni that night.
Well, yeah, it was a lot of cheese, which is never a bad thing. So she since then reads the instructions much more carefully.
So using living books and there's so many great books out there, especially geared towards younger kids. I've got one about I think it's the Roosevelt era and apple pie, and he visits this little town and they're talking about the apple pie, and it's just a really cute book. I've got one on the Lincoln family about the very first pardoning of the turkey. You know, that one's a lot of fun because it really gives an insight as to what the personalities were like. Your fan came to visit.
My fan came to visit.
So he says that you're supposed to be in bed, Mom.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, our team does videos in each week on our close group too. So Amy's kids are used to doing videos when we don't care who's on, and the cats will come through the room, you know, all those other things. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Our team is definitely a community and a family. And
we use a lot of puzzles. I've got solar system puzzles and different bat puzzles and things like that we've bought, and just have for him to be able to utilize and put together and enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. If you're in a group of homeschoolers that, you know, have a lot of resources, you know, share them, because of course you don't want to be able to have to buy all of these things, but I'm sure some of their homeschool families around you may have them that'll loan them out for a while. So we've done that in the past too, and that's been a great way to get things that we want to use but don't want to have to purchase or have to keep in our house for too long.
When I go to the book swaps, a lot of times they've got puzzles and hands-on stuff as well as the curriculum. And, that's where I've gotten several of my things.
All right. Well, we're wrapping up our time, and I wanted to make sure that we talked a little bit about True North Academy. I got their website. I thought I would bring that up. And again, for those of you who join us at the very beginning, next week, Lisa Nehring, who is the director for True North Academy, will be joining me. We're going to be talking about school vision. And Amy is an instructor for True North Academy. He does some special needs consulting for them.
I do. So I sit down and go through the testing that they offer, and we can go through it and see where the strengths and weaknesses are. And it's really helpful for figuring out where your children are at and where they need to go for the year, and working on through. Sorry, it's bedtime. Working through all of those things, coming up with goals for the year. If they need an IEP written, I can help them with writing that IEP. Coming up with any accommodations and even possibly some modifications that might be needed for curriculum to be successful.
And also, we had a post just a couple weeks ago that on the bottom of that. So if you look on the Sped Homeschool website and it's on the Lexile scores, at the bottom of that, there's a link to the True North Academy's your comprehensive testing.
Yes, for $19.
On Sped Homeschool, there's a code there that you can use to get it just for $19. And it's normally, what, $39?
Regular $39. So yeah. Lisa has gifted us that opportunity to have it for $19. And it is really, it can be taken more than once through between now and June. So I'm using it with my own son. We did it at the beginning of the year to kind of see where his strengths and weaknesses were. And then I'm going to do it again a couple of times during the year to show, to make sure we're making progress in those areas.
Awesome. Yep. Great. So definitely check that out on that specific blog. It's on Lexile Scoring on the Sped Homeschool website page, and that'll give you the code, the discount code. So, Jason, what a wealth of knowledge. Thank you both for sharing. Well, you are so welcome. I am just excited that Amy had time and was able to join us tonight. And this was fun.
It was
great information. Yes. So thank you, all of you, for joining us, and all of you that gave us comments and questions. We appreciate our audience. This broadcast is partially funded by the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America, and we thank them for that grant, and as well as viewers like you. And you can support this broadcast by donating on the Sped Homeschool website, as well as just checking out all of our other resources there and all of our partner organizations, like Amy was talking about. True North is one of our partner organizations, as well as a lot of the math programs that she mentioned. We have a lot of different curriculum providers, therapy providers, and other people that we're all coming together to try to create a community that supports special needs parents and your homeschooling efforts. So this is our end of our conversation this week, but we don't end here. We just continue the conversation in our support group on Facebook and also on our website. So make sure you join us there during the week, and I'll see you next Tuesday as I interview Lisa Nehring, and we talk about teaching towards your homeschool mission and vision. Thanks, and have a good night.
Bye-bye.